I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a deadly mass shooting in Seattle and not a real leader to be found. Plus, the effort to repeal Washington State's income tax faces a new hurdle. And a local school nurse has an unhinged farmer's market meltdown where she celebrates the murder of Charlie Kirk. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. There was a mass shooting in Seattle over the weekend. We're going to talk about that off the top of the show today. You know, people always say, oh, don't politicize it. Don't politicize it. It is political. It is political. There's no escaping it. And everything that followed, first of all, everything that led up to that shooting, everything that happened during that shooting, everything that has followed that shooting is political. It is political. And it is an example of what happens when you put people who are either incompetent in office or who are so ideologically driven that they literally don't care if people die in office. And sometimes you get both. Sometimes you get people who are incompetent and so ideologically driven, they don't care if people die. And all of that comes together for something like what happened at the Bite of Seattle. So Bite of Seattle, it's an event I've been to before, a massive gathering at Seattle Center where the Space Needle is, in case you're not familiar. A lot of food vendors, a lot of different activities there. Definitely something that families come to. There was a video taken by one of the vendors who was taping something for social media as the shooting rang out.
It's literally one viral video. And 200K, I'll get that plaque that says 100K.
Shooting?
Oh, shit. Oh, shit, right here. Get down. Yeah, just get down. Oh, it's right there. Oh, shit.
I'll get you a safe access route for fire here shortly.
Police dispatch.
214, all officers that are working the perimeter here, go in pairs. I don't want anybody going alone.
All officers are going pairs. No one goes alone.
We've got one suspect in custody, and we've got two GSW victims. Check that. We've got two in custody here.
Two in custody, two gunshot wounds.
We have a toddler shot as well on the grass.
We see a toddler shot.
At 214, I do not want anybody coming into the area of the shooting. This is a crime scene. Get everybody out.
Yeah, three now dead from gunshot wounds, four injured, including, as you heard there, a two-year-old toddler who was shot in the arm, luckily is still alive. There was also some conflicting information at the early stages of this from both police and also from elected leaders that there was two individuals taken into custody. But initially, there was actually only one. There's some video here that was circulating of that individual being led away by members of the Seattle Police Department. And if he looks young, it's because he is young. That individual's 15 years old, according to the latest information that just came out, which, look, there's a lot to dissect before we get to any sort of prosecution stage of this. But we know in the state of Washington, if you're 15 years old, they coddle you. It doesn't matter what you did. And it will be probably very difficult to charge that individual as an adult if they indeed ended up being one of the people who were armed and who shot, you know, at whoever they were trying to shoot, but also innocent bystanders. So we're smart, right? We're not freaking morons. So we know, you see that, you hear the, like even the slightest few details, and what do you know? Gang shooting. Obviously. Obviously it's a gang shooting. You get the information coming in. Like, I don't need the police department to come forward and tell me gang shooting, because I know they're not going to, not in Seattle. I don't need the mayor or the governor to come forward and tell me gang shooting, because we're not stupid, but they treat us like we're stupid. And there was this, there's this account, it's great if you don't follow it. It's West Coast Gang Wars, and they posted this. They say that this was a gang member named Junie, one of the people who was killed. They say he's a grimy gangster. I don't know if that's some sort of subset of a larger gang. It says Junie has officially been tucked into bed after his Reaper threw him in the boxing ring. Allegedly, he clocked out from a gunshot wound to his arm. That is from West Coast Gang Wars, which has been very, very good at identifying gang activity, gang violence, and victims of gang violence. So we're still waiting for identities. But again, I don't even need West Coast Gang Wars to tell me, oh, in the middle of the day in Seattle, a shootout between multiple people, suspects, people of color. Like, yeah, I'm sorry. I know that's a gang issue. So a few things here as we dissect all the many things that lead to something like this, all the many things that lead to a absolutely unacceptable response to this, and all the things that will follow. There was a TikToker who was at the Bite of Seattle and noticed what any sane person would notice when you've got an event where tens of thousands of people are going to be there. He arrives and he's so surprised at the lack of security that he shoots a video about it.
With no security, no pat down, no search of the bag. Surprise, there's not any security walking around. It's Bite of Seattle, got the budget. Y'all got the sponsors. You got the support.
Okay, I'm about to dip, but tap in with him.
Make it happen. Keep the people safe. Seattle, you should not be able to just walk into this festival with all these people, with all of these vendors, with no security. We in here with the bag. You feel me? With the bag. If nobody else is going to talk about it, I'm going to talk about it. We officially found the security after eating food in a fenced area.
Yeah, and look, there's a lot of police officers around at Bite of Seattle. I've been there before. But this guy's like, I brought this bag in, nobody even looked at it. And some of the witness reports that we're hearing is that one of these individuals at least had a larger type gun. And I know witness reports are notoriously unreliable. But when you hear the rapid fire of the bullets, I mean, it almost sounds like, you know, some sort of rifle that has been changed to be fully automatic or something. So we're going to figure out the details of that. But when you're not searching anyone, you're not wanding anyone, you're letting people bring in backpacks, that's not security. There's no security to be found. And even this TikToker knows that, like, hey, isn't it weird that I brought this backpack in and nobody even looked at it in a city where they claim to care so much about the possibility of gun violence and all these things? So we'll get back to more on that in a second. But this shooting happens midday. I mean, mid-evening. It's like 6 p.m. or something. Hours go by. Hours go by. With no briefing of the media, nothing. All of a sudden, darkness sets in. They set a time. I think the original time for the press conference was like 9:30 p.m., which even if they did it, then is too late. You're telling me it takes you 3.5 hours to give even just a baseline briefing of the media of what happened? That keeps getting pushed back. Oh, it keeps getting pushed back. Now we're past midnight. And some of the reporters, and I'll give it to even the mainstream reporters, they were vicious, and I loved it. I was there for every second of it. Jeremy Harris with Como News. One of the cops had told him, oh, we're waiting on dignitaries to show up, before we brief the public. And Jeremy Harris says, to hell we are.
We are almost 5 hours. I'm not mad at you.
Oh, I am mad at
the dignitaries that are holding up a press conference for the public to get information about a mass shooting outside of the space. It is outrageous
what I'm going to do.
To wait for dignitaries. Okay.
So what I'll do is I'll go back here and we'll get everybody down here. We'll get somebody to talk to you guys. I mean, I do understand, like I said, I do understand you guys have been out for a while. I've been out here for a long time.
It's not us, it's the public that needs to know.
And we want to get the information to everybody. So, okay? All right.
Do we have a timeline on when these supposed dignitaries are supposed to be here?
Let's just get who's here. Let's get them down here.
That's
you guys.
Then what we'll do is,
as those dignitaries come, then we'll have them come.
Yeah. But we need the police first. Okay.
Who are these so-called dignitaries?
They'll be here in a minute.
100%. And so credit to Jeremy Harris at Como News, Heather Bosch at Cairo 7. You also hear our friend Jonathan Cho in there being like, no, we're not waiting. We've been waiting for 5 hours. We're not waiting for dignitaries to show up, nor do you need to wait for dignitaries to show up to come and brief us, because the information we need right now is from the police department. Like, we can hear from the dignitaries waxing poetic about how horrible this is, blah, 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 and all that stuff later on. Because it is, but we don't have basic information 5 hours into this ordeal. This is what happens. Again, you've got incompetence, and I don't blame that officer right there. He's like, his hands are tied. He's like, I don't know, this is what I'm being told to do. But you've got incompetence mixed with ideology, and it's just absolutely coming to a head to show how bad things are run here in Washington State, in the city of Seattle. And meanwhile, we've got a child adult mayor who's hardly ever had a job in her life. And so she finally shows up. And here's how she begins a press conference that the press had been waiting for nearly 6 hours.
What happened here today at the Seattle Center was an unbelievable tragedy, a horrific act of violence. My heart right now is with the victims and their families and with everyone in our community who is reeling from what happened here today. We have far too much gun violence in this city and in this country. And we're coming off of a week in Seattle where we've had 3 major incidents of gun violence in just a few days. We have a lot of work to do as a city and as a country to make this better.
I get your passion, Mayor, but we need to know what happened tonight, please.
Yes. So our focus right now is with this investigation, with learning what happened so that we can provide accurate information to the public, with supporting the victims. I'm going to turn it over to Assistant Chief Tyrone Davis to tell you what we know.
I mean, that's an experience. Even Jay Inslee used to do better than that. It's one thing I always gave Governor Jay Inslee credit for, is there would be, and I'm not talking around the clock, but I remember when the Oso landslide happened, and we have people who are buried in the mud, and all of a sudden Jay Inslee comes up, and I'm thinking, great. Nope. He was like, we're going to get you information right away, and he just helped the press conference move along. And I was like, that's a great example. You could be there as a dignitary, but don't get in the way. And I wish the press was like that all the time. Again, that was Cairo 7's Heather Bosch, who was like, thank you for your passion. Understand it's sad, but we don't even have basic information from the police yet. And so she tosses it over to Assistant Seattle Police Chief Tyrone Davis, not the police chief. More on that in a moment. But he talks about how, you know, they believed it was 2 people shooting at each other.
Right now, we believe that we have no outstanding threat to the community. We do have 1 suspect that is being interviewed. We've recovered 2 guns.
Anyone else outstanding?
We believe there is 1 outstanding. That is part of our investigation. We are still trying to gather more information.
Do you have suspect description?
I do not have a suspect description for you at this time.
So this was a shootout in by the Seattle?
There were 2 people who we believe were shooting at each other.
2 people, again, okay, gang, that's what happens. And it could be that the second suspect is deceased, because of course they're saying it's one of those gang members who died in the shootout, the 15-year-old taken into custody. Whether there are any other people who are armed, I mean, that remains to be seen, certainly. So one of the other questions he was asked is, what do we know about the individual that was taken into custody? And he has precious few details.
Any idea on a motive?
Not at this time.
How old is your suspect in custody right now?
I'm not able to disclose that at a time. They're a young person.
Young person, we saw that. We now know they're 15 years old. He was asked, hey, do you know what kind of weapons were used?
What were the weapons that were recovered?
I don't have that information for you at this time.
You guys, that's 6 hours in. That's 6 hours in. And they know literally nothing. I mean, from witness videos, we knew more than that. Literally, you could have plucked a random witness out of the crowd and had them do the press conference, and they would have been able to give more detail than that. Absolutely outrageous. And again, you hear the videos of the gunshots. It's like, obviously, rapid fire. You had multiple witnesses describing it as some sort of large gun. You know, witnesses maybe don't know much about guns. So we kind of have some information on that. And then they also, standing next to each other, don't seem to know whether there was any camera footage of what happened.
Are there surveillance cameras in the area, and are any of those city-operated surveillance cameras?
There were no surveillance cameras in the immediate area where the shooting occurred.
So are there cameras here at Seattle Center that can be turned on?
There are no cameras that I'm aware of that are posted where this shooting occurred.
So. Mayor, after this tragedy, would you consider adding cameras to Seattle Center and maybe other parts of the city near Seattle Center?
My understanding is that there are cameras in Seattle Center, and we're working to see if any relevant footage is on those cameras.
So the mayor's like, no, there are cameras, and the assistant chief's like, there are no cameras in the area. And of course, there's this controversy over the socialist mayor doesn't want these. And look, I think across the aisle, there's people who don't like the idea of these police crime cameras and privacy concerns. But that's been a big issue for her during her time in office thus far. As I had alluded to, Chief Sean Barnes was nowhere to be found. And, you know, this is another I'm going to break down all of the consequences of electing people who don't know what they're doing. But apparently, and I've heard this now from multiple people, Sean Barnes doesn't even live in Seattle. He was an outsider who was hired. He's got a place in Chicago. And apparently he was scheduled to not be back in Seattle. The chief of police, paid $370,000 a year, was scheduled to not be back in town until mid-August. Here's Jonathan Cho asking, where's the chief?
Mayor, where is Chief Sean Barnes? And does he actually have a residence here in Seattle?
Yeah, I believe he does. He's out of town right now. He'll be back in the morning. So I'm serving as acting chief in his absence, but he'll be here in the morning.
Yeah, so he's flying back in to try to be like, here I am. And normally, look, you can't predict a shooting. And I'm not saying that the chief of police or any other elected leader shouldn't be able to have vacations, especially during the summer. I get it. But if this is really someone who, you know, was brought in for the job, has a place in Chicago, is sort of commuting, so to speak, back and forth on the weekends, that's problematic. And that makes literally no sense if you're going to be the police chief of a major U.S. city. One more clip I want to play for you before we really get down and dirty on how people have voted for this. I would argue the majority of people at that Bite of Seattle voted for this level of incompetence. So Bob Ferguson was standing there, the governor, of course, and Jonathan Cho asked him about, hey, you know, what are we doing about the fact that we have the lowest number of police officers per capita of any state in the nation?
Governor, after this public safety tragedy, what is your office doing to add more police officers to cities like Seattle and Washington State?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. Number one, I just want to express my deep appreciation for the first responders who, as you heard, were literally on the scene and stepped in to help address the situation. And any shooting like this is senseless. I think it's magnified for an event like this. And so all of us, our hearts go out to everybody who's impacted by this. I can't imagine being the parent of a 2-year-old toddler, for example, who's injured in a shooting like this. But for everybody who's impacted, our hearts go out to them. Number two, to your question specifically, yes, as you know, in legislation, my first year as governor, we put into our budget $100 million grant program for local jurisdictions to get more law enforcement officers, which is something I support as part of my campaign for governor. That legislation got through, and now those dollars are starting to flow to local jurisdictions. So I support that effort. We'll continue to support that effort. I think that was the reason. This is the type of thing we rely on our first responders at a time like this to keep our community safe, and that's why I support them.
Yeah, that program has hired 0 new cops. 0. Not 1, 0. We're still the lowest number per capita of any state in the nation. And it's because I said at the time, what did I say when he floated that program? He wanted to pretend like he suddenly cared about public safety and cared about cops, even though he spent the last few years of his time as attorney general trying to put police officers in prison for murder unsuccessfully. And then he's like, oh, no, we want to hire more cops. I said, you can't throw money at cops and fix the problem. You don't respect them. They're not safe here. You pass laws to tie their hands. Well, you pass laws to empower criminals. You can't buy their dignity with money. And here we are, 1.5 years, 2 years later, no new cops. So let's talk a little bit about the arc here. And hell yes, I will make this political every second of the day. And if you hear anyone saying, don't make it political, just turn them off. Turn them off, because that's not reality. So first of all, in the backdrop of all of this, we've got at least one 15-year-old gang member who's in custody, looks like another, can't tell by the picture, but probably not even 21, dead. This is the most common type of shooting in the city of Seattle. Most common type of shooting, gang on gang. It accounts for far more fatalities than mass school shooters. Oh, mass shootings committed by young white men. Mass shootings committed by some of the guns banned by Bob Ferguson and the Democrats because they're so dangerous. These types of shootings, but how often do you hear Democrats talk about them? Virtually not at all. The same thing that happens in Chicago. Chicago mayor's got a trans femicide day of awareness for trans violence. Well, like 48 people die in a week in his city from gang violence, and he just says nothing about it. We have a problem with young black men picking up guns to solve perceived beefs. We have a gang violence problem. It's not a gun problem. But the issue is that doesn't get Democrats the splashy headlines. So what do? Bob Ferguson, obsessed during his time as AG, every single year until it was done, passing a ban on so-called assault weapons. All it did is prevent law-abiding citizens from having those guns. We already know one of the shooters, alleged 15 years old. Guess what? He can't have a gun. It doesn't matter what kind of gun. He can't have one of the big scary weapons of war. He can't have a handgun. And oh my gosh, I know this will surprise you. He had one anyway. Because guess what? Criminals don't follow the law. Gang members don't follow the law. We have a ban on high-capacity magazines. The witnesses said they heard dozens of rounds. Doesn't seem like those gang members were abiding by the ban on high-capacity magazines, does it? We have the ban on so-called assault weapons, ban on high-capacity magazines. Yet the instances of shots fired in Seattle and Washington State in recent years have spiked. So not only more shootings, but more individual shots fired. Despite the fact that we banned these things. It doesn't work. It got them big splashy headlines and the media said, great job, you guys are just the best. Did nothing. It was a distraction from the real problem, but they can't talk about the real problem because the real problem involves race. Oh, race. It's so scary to talk about the truth of what's going on. And you heard it with Katie Wilson coming out right there at the beginning and talking about guns. Guns do this. Guns, it's a gun violence problem. Did you ever notice that when the shooter is white, who do they blame? The shooter, of course. The shooter, the shooter's ideology, the shooter's motivation. When the shooter is black or brown, who do they blame? The gun. Not their fault. It's the gun's fault. No, it's the person's fault in every instance, whether they're white, black, brown, Asian, whatever it is. It's the person's fault. So they do things that make them feel good, that don't make the problem any better. In fact, it just makes it more difficult for would-be victims to protect themselves, especially in communities of color, especially in communities where people might be poor. All those gun control laws do is burden them and make it impossible for them to defend themselves against gang members. So you're doing that, and then you're hailing yourselves as these heroes by reducing gun violence when you haven't reduced gun violence at all. And then what's happening at the exact same time? Democrats in Olympia are pushing laws to take it easy on criminals who use guns to commit crimes. Democrats in Olympia who put forth policies to try to end prison sentences early for gang members who commit drive-by shootings that kill someone. Oh, because life dealt them a hard hand. So it's okay if they committed a drive-by shooting and, boop, a stray bullet went into a storefront and killed a child. They just had it tough in life. Let's let them out of prison early. Democrats pushed a bill that would reduce certain gun enhancements, firearm enhancements, from the list that already exists. If you use a gun in this way, in this place, there's an enhancement that goes on top of your crime. Democrats want to lower that. At the same time, screeching that guns are horrible, guns are awful, we don't want guns at all. But the actual criminals who use guns, you want to reduce the punishments for them? If you can tell that I'm passionate about this, I very much am. Because literally all of that nonsense leads to people getting killed. It leads to a two-year-old getting shot in the arm at a food festival. And they still come out and virtue signal and pat themselves on the back and, oh, this is about guns. The Alliance for Gun Responsibility put this out. Tonight, another mass shooting terrorized families during what should have been a safe Sunday evening at the Bight of Seattle. While the details are still emerging, multiple people have been shot, our hearts, blah, blah, blah. No one should have to run for their lives while attending a community festival. We'll continue to monitor updates. And then they talk about guns. Alliance for Gun Responsibility has been responsible for most of the bans that have gone into place in the state of Washington. But they don't have an ounce of introspection. Gee, this is weird. You can't. It's illegal to have a gun if you're 15. We banned those big scary guns. We banned magazines over 10 rounds. Yet this kid had a gun, a big one, shot a lot of rounds. What happened? No introspection to say maybe that stuff doesn't work. Maybe we need to put people in prison who commit these sorts of crimes. Not give them plea deals. Because that's what happens now. You look at virtually any gun case, when you've got one of these young gang members especially, who commit a crime with a firearm, there is supposed to be a mandatory 5 years hard time firearm enhancement on sentencing. Hard time means you can't get a single day off of it for good time. You're going to serve those 5 years no matter what. And that's what you would do in a state that says it cares about gun violence. Yet prosecutors plea that away. Hey, we'll make you a deal. Just plead guilty. We'll get rid of that pesky firearm enhancement. What do you have it for? You're making life more difficult for all the people who've never committed a crime with a gun in their lives. And then when you've got the gang member on the street corner who sprays into a whole neighborhood, you're like, that gun enhancement, no big deal. You don't got any to spend any time for that. And not to mention juvenile crime. This has been one of the key things Democrats in Washington state have been trying to do, is reduce punishments for juvenile offenders, because they say that their brains aren't fully formed to fully understand the consequences of their actions. Yet those same politicians say that kids as young as 13, 14, 15, 16 years old should be able to make life-altering medical decisions without their parents and even get their genitals cut off because they're mature enough to know who they really are. Mature enough to get your genitals cut off, not mature enough to be held accountable if you shoot and kill someone. These people are incompetent ideologues. And then you stack all of that on top of having a socialist mayor who was all in on the police defunding movement, who took what, I don't know which of the dignitaries, it took 6 hours to get there, but came and didn't add anything, had no idea what she's doing because she's never had a job before. And Seattle voters said, give us that one. And then Washington state voters said, oh, here's this guy who has a track record of hating cops, has never had a job really in the private sector in his whole life, is a shapeshifter just to get elected. Let's elect him governor. And then he wants to come in and say, we're going to hire more cops, $100 million on it, zero cops. And you know what? November, they'll do it all again. The voters here will do it all again. 2028, they'll do it all again. Because what, you'd rather have people who don't care if their policies get innocent people murdered, get 2-year-olds shot in the arm because the specter of like Orange Man bad is so much worse? It's enough to make a certain podcaster want to quit her job. Because it's like, how do you get through to people like that? Democrats did that. They did that. They have created an environment that allows what happened at Bite of Seattle to happen. As I said at the beginning, it is political. And then on top of all of that, you don't even go through the very basic step of searching people's bags when they come in, wanding them down. I mean, what major gathering have you been to in the last 20 years where you didn't have to go through some sort of security? And they're not going to do it at Bite of Seattle? Why? Somebody was trying to save a little money? Or they thought, oh, it's okay, nobody will bring a gun in. We have all those gun laws. So nobody will bring a gun in here. And we've got 3 people dead, 4 people injured, including a 2-year-old. And not an ounce of leadership to get us through the moment. Not even a police chief who lives in town. And you'll do it. You'll just keep voting for them. You'll just keep voting for them. It's one of the mysteries of the universe. It's one of the mysteries of the universe. You want to fix all this, fixing it is simple. And yes, there's some feel-good things in that fix-it plan too. We have a lot of young men in this state and in this country who are lost, who have no one to look up to, who have no role models in their life, whose brothers have been gangbangers, whose uncles have been gangbangers, whose fathers have been gangbangers, and that's all they know. And they have no hope for an economic future. And they've got a public school system that doesn't teach them shit and doesn't hold them accountable when they don't show up for class and says no student should fail. So they never learn that there's consequences for their actions. And they can go out and they can steal 7, 8, 9, 10 cars in the state of Washington, and judges will say, no, go home. It's all right. And we wonder why eventually they end up killing someone or they get killed. So yes, we have to provide economic opportunity for these young people, but it starts in school. It starts with healthy role models, not teachers who are unhinged ideologically and will teach them in classrooms that no matter what they do, no matter how smart they are, no matter how much effort they put in, that the system was designed to hold them down because of the pigmentation of their skin. So they just give up. They give up as young people because, oh, the system is out to get me. There's nothing I can do. I'm a victim. No, we need powerful role models that will say, you're not a victim. You're not a victim of your circumstances. You can be empowered by your circumstances. You can have a better life. Here's how we're going to do it. We're going to start with a good education. We're going to teach you about economic literacy. We're going to connect you with job opportunities and internships, and we're going to make sure that you have good mentors every step of the way in athletic competition, and we're going to keep you on the right path. And we're going to make sure that you see a future for yourself, and it's not a future of victimhood, and it's not a future of creating victims of other people. And then if you still go out there and you live that life, there are consequences for it. If you're 12 and you steal a car, there's a consequence for it. If you're 15 and you get in a fight at school, there's a consequence for it. And you teach consequences early on so that you don't have one of these kids who got off the hook, got off the hook, got off the hook, and then bam, they shot someone. And now they're going to prison for the rest of their life. Or bam, they got shot and now they're dead. And for the ones who still sneak through the cracks, and they make it into adulthood and they continue a life of crime, the only path for them is prison. You don't reduce punishments for them. You send them to prison. And while they're in prison, you try again. They're serving their time. You try to break the cycle while they're in prison. And I'm all for that. I'm all for heavy rehabilitation in prison. Whether it's substance abuse or a lack of economic opportunity, teach them a skill, get them a job, connect them with people on the outside, because most of them will get out of prison someday. And we need them to be contributing members of society. But that's difficult work. That's hard work. That's not work that gets you a splashy headline where you banned big scary guns. It's not work that will get the far left base fired up when you say, oh, hey, you know, we're going to take it easy on juvenile offenders because of their skin pigmentation. And a small faction of the left says, oh, good for you. The woke white guilt people, good for you, good for you, good for you. You're not doing anything for them. You're just hastening their demise by doing that. You're making it more likely they get killed in a gang shootout. You're making it more likely that eventually they spend the rest of their lives in prison when they do something so bad that not even the state laws in Washington will let them off the hook for it. And there are Democrats who understand this. And I realize I'm 35 minutes into the show, but I'm so passionate about this. And I just don't understand why people don't see it. Why do you not see it? That the people you're voting for, they just don't care. They don't care to do the hard work. The hard work isn't splashy. The hard work isn't sexy. And the media is complicit too, because the media applauds them for virtue signaling. And it's soul sucking, and people are dying. And you could apply this same thing to the homeless crisis, to the drug crisis, to really any other complex problem, that people in government are either too incompetent or too ideological or too corrupt to fix. All right, coming up next, the Washington state income tax faces a new hurdle, and it is an awful shady one. And then we also are getting some new information in on why it took so long for dignitaries to get to the scene of the shooting over the weekend. We'll update you on that a little bit later in the show. First, our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com is the guy that you want to reach out to if you're thinking about selling your home. Maybe you're trying to leave the state of Washington and go somewhere else, or maybe you're just trying to move down the street or across the street or downsize or upsize. Wes is the guy you want to talk to. The first thing I would tell you to do with Wes is just get a free market analysis. You know, the market's very strange right now. There's a lot of listings because people are trying to leave the state. There's not as many people coming in to buy those listings. But I will say, you know, it might be a good opportunity for people who've been struggling to break into the housing market and are looking to do that. So I would just say get a market analysis from Wes. He'll give you a lay of the land. He'll explain, hey, you know, with all these listings, here's what we need to do to make sure that your listing is the one that stands out. And this is what he specializes in. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, so you know that in November, you will have an opportunity. I'm fired up right now. I'm like so sweaty from yelling. Hold on. These people piss me off. They piss me off with their incompetence. Anyway, so in November, you will have an opportunity to repeal Washington State's new unconstitutional income tax. We've been waiting to see exactly what the ballot language is going to look like. Because as you know, there's been a corruption of this process in a lot of different ways. But one of the things that Democrats, and look, I'll give it to them, politically brilliant, that they did a couple years ago, because conservatives were frequently trying to run initiatives to repeal taxes, is they said, okay, if somebody has a successful initiative to repeal a tax, not only do you have that initiative verbiage on the ballot, but we also have to write in a little line that says how repealing the tax will hurt the state of Washington. And it's just crazy because we kind of call it the, like, children will and dogs will die. You know, it's like, oh, if you repeal this tax, like, children will suffer and puppies will die. And that's, like, literally what they do. So now we know, at least unless there is a successful challenge, exactly how the initiative to repeal the income tax will appear on your ballot. So this is what it will say. Initiative measure number IP26-645 concerns state and local taxes. This measure would repeal a 9.9% tax on annual individual income over $1 million, prohibit taxes measured by individual income, and taxes on individual income or the receipt of individual income, and it would define income. This measure would decrease funding for public K-12 education, higher education, including universities and community colleges, and human services, primarily healthcare. That last line is what's called a public investment impact disclosure statement. It is written by, and this is what's required by state law, it is written by the Attorney General's office. So Democrats passed the requirement for these public investment impact disclosure statements, and they assigned the Attorney General's office to be the one to write it. And it has to be between 10 and 15 words. It has to be very brief. It's supposed to be sort of non-biased. And I can get into and will some of the issues I see with the Attorney General's office being the entity to write it. But that is the suggested impact disclosure line that the Deputy Solicitor General wrote and sent to Nick Brown, the Attorney General of the state of Washington, to say this is what's going to be on the ballot. Now, a couple things here. So I actually don't think the verbiage of the initiative itself on the ballot is so bad because it doesn't have the, you know, millionaire's tax language. It does say, can we look at that again, Nicole? This measure would repeal a 9.9% tax on annual individual income over $1 million. Now, if it stopped there, I'd be like, that's really easy for people to say, oh, well, that's not me. But it goes on to say it also prohibits taxes measured by individual income and taxes on individual income or the receipt of individual income. So I think if people read it, they'll be like, oh, well, yeah, I want to prevent taxes on individual income. So I'm hoping that that's helpful. But then you get to that impact disclosure and, oh, but it would decrease funding for public K-12 education and human services like healthcare. And that's where you get the lefties who are like, well, I don't want to do that. But of course, the problem is this. The income tax doesn't even start collecting money until 2029. So how can there be negative funding implications for a tax that hasn't even taken effect? For a tax that hasn't collected a penny? The other issue is none of that, K-12 education, higher education, human services, none of it is funded explicitly through the quote-unquote millionaire's tax passed by Democrats. There are no line items in that bill that say, oh, 25% has to go to K-12 education. 10% has to go to health care. That's not even in there. So where are they getting that from? So a couple things. First, I wanted to get Brian Haywood's statement on this. So Brian Haywood, of course, is the chief of Let's Go Washington. And so he's the main backer of this initiative. He responded in a statement to the Center Square, I-645 cuts no program, benefit, or existing funding. It repeals an unconstitutional income tax that will not collect a dollar until 2029. You cannot cut money that does not yet exist. So here's the Attorney General's office statement in response to that. And I double-checked this statement. I read the state law, so this statement is accurate. Mike Falk with the AG's office said state law provides that when the fiscal impact is primarily to the general fund, the public investment impact disclosure should list the top three categories of state services provided by the general fund. That's what the public investment impact disclosure for this initiative does. And indeed, in the law that created the public investment impact disclosure, it said if there's no specific, you know, funding listed, or if most of it goes to the general fund, then you list the basically three biggest expenses of state government from the general fund. So education, higher education, like healthcare, et cetera. So that's what the Attorney General's office is doing. But I would say that doesn't make it right. I don't even think that this should have an impact disclosure, because if it's not in effect yet, you would just go back to where you were. So we've got 3 years before it would actually have an impact. So I don't think this should have a disclosure at all. But all it should say, and I think the law needs to change, not that Democrats will do that, is, you know, this would impact the state general fund, you know, because it doesn't actually, they don't have to spend a dime of that money on K-12 education. There's no mandate to spend a dime on that money, of that money on healthcare. So it's all just very confusing. So I am told there will likely be a challenge against this. They have until the end of the day today to challenge the public disclosure impact statement thing. So that will be TBD on whether this stands up or whether it's something else. In the meantime, there's also a separate lawsuit against this disclosure, but disclosures in general. So this is from the Seattle Times. New Wall Millionaire's Tax Lawsuit challenges ballot language. So there's a guy, his name is Arthur West. He's an open government advocate. So he's filed a lawsuit in Thurston County Superior Court. It names Secretary of State Steve Hobbs and Attorney General Nick Brown. It says, rather than disputing the tax itself, West's lawsuit asks whether lawmakers can require government-written language to a citizen initiative to be added to the initiative after the petition process is complete. The case could have broader implications for how Washington's citizen initiative process operates. So what he's saying, and it's an interesting point, is you've got this tax that's passed, and then somebody runs an initiative on it. And then you add language to that initiative to add that to the ballot. If you're going to do that, shouldn't you have to add the language before people collect signatures for the initiative? Because then people, when they're going to sign the initiative, they can read it all. Like, hey, this is what it does. This is what the fiscal impact would be. And I'm still going to sign my name to it or I'm not. That actually makes a lot more sense. So you've got this lawsuit that's going on, and I don't know how long this will take, whether it'll be successful in time for November, and then you have the likelihood, I'm told, that there will be a challenge specifically on the income tax issue. So this wording isn't final yet, but that could be what we're looking at for November. And I don't think it's horrible, I will say. I think it could be a lot worse, but I also don't think that it's particularly great. All right. A couple things. So we had reached out and we just got this. So I will, want to play it now. So we're talking about the shooting. So we asked the dignitaries that were there, Governor Bob Ferguson, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, and Katie Wilson, like who was the one that was so late, we had to wait 6 hours for this, essentially. And is that appropriate? Did somebody with the office say you must wait? Whatever it is. So we got this from Brianna Ajo, a spokesperson for Governor Ferguson. She says the governor was at a softball tournament with his daughter over the weekend. He was in Olympia by approximately 2 p.m. on Sunday. He received word about the shooting at approximately 7 p.m. and immediately drove to Seattle. He was at a location within 10 minutes of Seattle Center by 9 p.m. At approximately 10:10 p.m., the governor received word there would be media availability at Seattle Center. He immediately proceeded there and arrived at Seattle Center at approximately 10:30. So that tells me that they weren't necessarily waiting for the governor, or that they were for a short period of time, but the governor was there by 10:30, according to his office. So they certainly could have held a press conference as well. So Katie Wilson this morning, I think this was, she had another press conference this morning that just wrapped up, and she addressed the delay in the press conference.
SPD conducted a briefing with elected officials online at 9 p.m., including many people standing here today. We were advised that it was better for me and others not to be on the scene. Once it became clear that SPD was ready to brief the press, I, the governor, Congresswoman Jayapal, made our way rapidly to Seattle Center so that we would be able to be there to share that information with you all.
Okay, so we still have no answer as to why it took 6 hours or so. It might even have been more than 6 hours. I'm not exactly sure what time the press conference started. So was it Jayapal? We haven't heard back from Jayapal's office yet.
Not from her. Okay. I did hear back from Katie's office, who said they're forwarding my note to her.
Yeah.
Because they're in a communications person.
They don't have a communications person right now because they quit or they were fired or something.
Yeah, he's actually still there until tomorrow, but he's not answering the question.
Yeah. And then you saw Chief Barnes is in the background of that press conference that they just had. So he did make it back from wherever he was summering.
It seems to me it was a SPD problem. That's where the blame is being laid, I think.
That's possible. But Chief Barnes at the press conference still wouldn't confirm whether it was gang violence, said it was group activity. Okay. I can't help you. I can't help you with that. I mean, I can't make you I get it. I have a different job than them. I want them sharing confirmed information. But at this point, surely you've talked to the family. Sure, you've talked to enough witnesses and friends who were there with them to know that this is a gang issue and that these people have gang ties. And you don't just, as a 15-year-old, bring a big fat gun into a thing and then start getting a shootout with someone unless there's a gang beef, you know? It's just outrageous. All right. We're going to move on to our segment. Should we do a double dose today? I think so, because there's a lot. Let's get to our segment. Unbelievable. There was a festival in Issaquah, Washington over the weekend. It's one that I've been to before, a lot of vendors set up, a very sweet, nice little community, it's a ton of fun. You can go see the salmon thing and all that. Okay, cool. So, not so cool if you are going there in a Trump hat and a Charlie Kirk Freedom t-shirt, as one guy did with his wife, and they go up to this, what looks like a stand for a Mexican bakery. They're buying some goods when they are confronted by two unhinged white women.
What country do you think this came from?
Mexico.
Thank you so much.
She's in a free country being able to serve it.
Yes.
If you hate it here so much, go somewhere else.
I hate you. Oh. I hate you.
But I thought you're supposed to be so loving and kind.
Can we go? I'm not tolerant. I'm just as tolerant as you are, bitch.
Apparently not.
Wow. You're so nice.
No, I'm not. I'm a bitch. I'm a bitch.
Wow. You need Jesus.
Yeah. Jesus ate my fucking snapshot.
You need Jesus. You, one day.
Yes, baby, work it. You look so good, my love. You look amazing. Much better than the maggots over here. You're looking so good.
Why is your man all up on me?
No,
that's
truly
so embarrassing.
Freedom. Why is he in the Mexican bakery is what I want.
No, the man who hates
thank you so much.
She has to say thank you because she is serving everyone. So
Charlie Kirk.
Oh my God! Thank God he's dead. Bye.
Wow.
So you see these people buying baked goods from this Mexican bakery, and this poor Mexican woman's in there what's happening? And is just trying to sell her stuff that the conservatives are buying. And there's just these atrocious young white women, what are they trying to accomplish? They're just so mad that he's got a MAGA hat on and a shirt and like, oh, you know where these baked goods are from. Well, suggesting, oh, they must be anti-Mexican. Like, well, they're buying baked goods from a Mexican bakery. And then says, glad Charlie Kirk's dead, flips off the camera, sticks out her tongue. And they just think they're so cool and charming and awesome and woke. Well, it turns out the young woman who said that she was glad Charlie Kirk was dead and was participating in the harassment of this conservative couple is a school nurse at Eastlake High School by the name of Kelsey Ballin. Kelsey Ballin. And Kelsey, how do people not know? It's going to take the internet 5 seconds to identify who you are, but they think that they're so in the right that it's not a big deal. And look, I always struggle because it's free speech. If you want to be an unhinged lunatic, by all means, free speech. But you're a public school employee entrusted with caring for the health of children. And you're saying that you're glad that a young man was shot in the neck and killed. That's disqualifying for me. So there were all these calls on social media to call Eastlake High School. I imagine that they're having a very bad day over there. I don't think it's going well for them. So Eastlake High School is in the Lake Washington School District, and they released a very lengthy statement. Let us share that with you. Lake Washington School District is aware of a video circulating on social media involving a district staff member. We've received concerns from community members regarding the statements and conduct shown in the video. The district takes these concerns seriously. While we cannot comment on individual personnel matters, district leadership has initiated a review of the circumstances surrounding the incident and will follow established processes as the review moves forward. It is important to note the views expressed in the video do not reflect the views, values, or positions of the Lake Washington School District. LWSD is committed to providing welcoming, safe, and inclusive learning environments for all students, family, staff, and community members. We expect all employees to uphold the professional standards and the values, blah, 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 retain the rights and protections as private citizens. Balancing these principles is central to how the district approaches situations like this one. To me, they're foreshadowing to say, oh, she has a free speech right to say this. Because this is an ongoing personnel matter, we are unable to provide additional information at this time. We remain committed to our values as an organization. Okay. So, and I get it. I mean, what is the line, right? What is the line? And for me, free speech, it never means freedom from consequence, but unless you work for the government, right? It's about protecting the government from coming after you for your speech. So in this sense, if she had a private employer, it'd be really easy to just boot her because a private employer can fire you for really any reason they want. But now you've got a school district that says, oh, you know, she still has First Amendment rights. But for parents, if I'm a conservative parent specifically, do I want my child being treated by that nurse who just celebrated the assassination of someone? Probably not. So it creates a bigger issue for the school district. But those girls are everything that's wrong with America. Everything that's wrong with this whiny, entitled, victim, oppressor versus oppressed, generation. And they think they're so cool there. I mean, absolutely disgusting. Kelsey Ballin, I hope that that incident follows you for the rest of your life. I truly do. All right, let's get to a double dose of unbelievable. I didn't think this was real. I've had to be extra careful lately because the internet's got out of its mind with AI and all sorts of nonsense. I mean, X is a cesspool. I was just seeing somebody posting AI-enhanced videos of the suspect in the Seattle shooting. I'm like, there's already videos of them. Why do you need to post an AI-enhanced video? There's so much nonsense. So I saw this, I said, no way. Even in this crazy world, this might be a little bit too crazy. But no, it's true. This is from The Telegraph. Minnesota to hand out taxpayer-funded trans dolls in classrooms. The paper models, which feature removable genitalia, are aimed at gender-diverse children as young as 4. Okay. So apparently this is a program. It's going to be paper dolls. And yes, you can take the PP off and or put the PP on, change the clothes, change the look, all sorts of things. So basically they want to teach 4-year-olds like to play with gender and to be gender fluid and that their dolls should be gender fluid too. So it says Minnesota is planning to hand out transgender dolls to children as young as 4 years old. The paper dolls, which feature removable genitalia, were created by the University of Minnesota Medical School for children under 10 to, quote, learn about the different options that exist for who they can be, according to the New York Post. Learn about the different options that exist for who they can be. Each doll has a gender-neutral name, removable internal and external genitals, and more than 100 pieces of clothing, accessories, and hairstyles. Governor Tim Walz reportedly funded the controversial project, which has prompted anger from conservative groups. This should prompt anger from every parent. We want to teach children who they can be. It's not a doll that you can dress it up as an astronaut or basketball player. So any sort of number of healthy, normal things that we use to teach kids who they can be. No, you can rip out your ovaries and then put a penis on. Or in this one, here's an example of the different clothing. You can be a big man and wear a tutu. We're just experimenting here, you know? It's all cool. And look at you see the little naked doll underneath it? Look how like non-sexualized it is. Like it's got nothing. Nothing. It's a blank slate and that's what they want. I mean, this really is, it's not funny. It's disgusting.
That's a little Wendy Adams dress up there.
Yeah, I mean, good.
Wednesday Adams.
So this is a picture of Professor Diane Berg, who's a co-founder of My Gender Dolls and shock, gray-haired white lady. I mean, shock, right? Mm-hmm. We might need a purge of some kind to an island. Purge these people to an island. So then you've got all the examples of the dolls and the different parts that come on, get taken off. And here's the thing. I went to this website for the My Gender Dolls. It's like there's almost nothing there. It's got kind of like a description of what the dolls are, but then all of the links across the top, like about, blah, blah, blah. They're all dead links. It says coming soon, coming soon, coming soon, coming soon. So it's wait, this thing was funded and now the kids are going to be given these in Minnesota and your website doesn't even really function? Sounds like a scam to me. But gosh, if I were an unsavory character, I'd be like, what's the wokest nonsense stupidity that I can sell the government of Minnesota or Washington State or California? Oh, how about dolls where their genitals come off and they can be dressed as boys or girls and totally asexual and give them to four-year-olds? They'll eat that up. And then I'd create some sort of website real quick, you know, whatever the website hosts are, I'd pay $5.99 for it. And then I'd rake in $20 million from the state. So if I were an unsavory character, man, I'd be rich. I would be so rich on government contracts. But this is, of course, disgusting. And again, they're just saying what the point of it is in the actual learn about the different options that exist for who they can be. It's not about making trans kids comfortable so they have a doll that looks like them. No, it's about making kids uncomfortable in their God-given body. And then they're going to experiment with new ways. They're going to be told, oh, this is great. That's special. That would make you special. And then, boom, they're indoctrinated at the age of 4. And by the age of 14, they're cutting their breasts off. Sick, 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 sick. All right. If the shooting hadn't happened in Seattle over the weekend, I would have led with the Fauci diaries. Because I'm that. I know I never lead with national, but it's not national. This man impacted every single one of our lives. No single person 100%. Had more of an impact on humanity than Anthony Fauci during the pandemic. Not even the president. And he apparently kept diaries. And they are insane. We'll get to that coming up next. First, there's a lot happening in the world. As you know, you want to make sure your retirement portfolio is properly equipped for the times that we're living in, whether it has to do with energy and what's happening in the Middle East or AI, crypto, and tech. So I recommend getting a second opinion on your retirement portfolio with my money manager, Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. Zach and his team are always focused on managing risk, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get a second opinion? This is one of the most important things that we will do for ourselves, is plan for the retirement that we dream of. I think of it literally every single day. Apparently, this is what happens when you're starting to approach 40. I would also argue I'm having daily mental health breakdowns because of how bad politics are in Washington State, and I just can't wait to retire one day. But anyway, reach out to our friend Zach at Bulwark Capital. Ask for a free Know Your Risk portfolio review. And unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every single day from Zach on his Know Your Risk podcast, on his YouTube channel, and all social media platforms. Just search Know Your Risk podcast. Know Your Risk podcast. Okay, so Rand Paul, great job, Rand Paul. The senator has released a bunch of documents about Anthony Fauci, and this is all in anticipation of Fauci finally testifying before Congress under oath. Rand Paul said, for years, Anthony Fauci has dodged, deflected, and hidden behind a pardon. On July 29th at 8:30 a.m., that ends. Fauci will finally testify before my committee. Mark your calendars. We have to be at 8:30. That's 5:30 our time. I might get up at 5:30 for that. So you all know my background with the pandemic. I was a legacy news reporter at the Fox affiliate in Seattle. And the first 3 months, I was hook, line, and sinker. I was like, yes, government. Yes, tell me what to do and I'll do it. And then I'll tell all the people on TV to do it too. And then I woke up and then I kept waking up. And now I'm angry about all of it. And I don't think I'll ever quite get over it. And in the newsroom, I really started to wonder, like, why we weren't asking hard questions of the governor, for instance, about all the mandates, and they didn't seem to make a lot of sense. And I was like, isn't that kind of our job? And I was sort of shut down. And that really was the process that started me thinking about leaving Legacy News. So I look back at all of it with renewed intrigue and renewed questions. So apparently, Anthony Fauci was keeping a diary during all of this. Now, on the face, that's not odd to me. This was like a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. That's what his whole career had been centered around. And maybe he was already thinking, I'll probably write a book about this one day. Maybe he thought, I might die and I want everything that happened to be written down. I don't know. I don't think it's particularly odd to have sort of daily entries when this thing, insane thing was happening globally, to sort of say, here's how this progressed that you could look back upon and reference. That's not what this is. This is Anthony Fauci's personal love letters to himself. So there's a couple things, I mean, off the top, you know, for instance, entries would look like this. May 21st, 2020. Global cases, 234,000. New cases, 24,000. Deaths, 9,800. Italy has had 3,400 deaths, now surpassed China. USA has 5,300 new deaths. So that kind of stuff. And if he had like kind of left it there and then he talks about, you know, at a task force meeting, I stress the problems about PPEs, blah, blah, blah. I don't know that this would really be a story. But then he goes into how beloved he is becoming around the world. Right after the death count. Death count, then big front page article about me appeared in the Washington Post. Very flattering. The situation with my national and international fame is explosive and really unimaginable. It is not hyperbole to say that today I am the most famous and talked about person in the country and one of the most recognizable people in the world. Countless profiles on me in multiple media. I can't even read all the things written about me. POTUS seems to be enamored of me, even though I'm taking the spotlight away from him. And then he keeps going on all these profiles. Again, March 22nd, 2020, cases continue to soar. 400 deaths in the United States. And then he adds, right after the deaths, press is going wild with me. Front page of the Washington Post yesterday and an op-ed by Maureen Dowd in the New York Times today about me and my relationship with POTUS. Then he says, profile by Peter Nicholas of me in the Atlantic. And then he even has clippings of this article, Why America is Thirsty for Anthony Fauci. During the pandemic, a 79-year-old immunologist is becoming as crushable as a pop star. And then this headline, if you don't have a crush on this man, do you even care about public health? This goes on and on and on. He's talking about people approaching him about how much money he could be making and book deals, and this agent wants to sign him. All while our lives are being torn apart, and he's reveling in the attention that he's getting. That in and of itself would be enough. But there is some stuff in here that proves he's a liar. He lied to us and continued to lie to us. And this shows it. For instance, after most of the pandemic had sort of been let go, I will say, by leaders in the United States, he, you know, this is when some of the criticism of him started to creep in. He went on the news and talked about how, like, they're blaming me for things I didn't even do.
They always come back and say Fauci was responsible for closing schools. I had nothing to do.
I mean, let's
get down to the facts.
Let's get down to the facts. His own diary said he helped close schools. He encouraged mayors to close schools. I spoke with Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York City, and convinced him, based on what I was saying publicly and my conversation tonight, to close the New York City schools. I had a similar call with Ann O'Leary, the chief of staff of Governor Gavin Newsom in California. And then he adds, when I left the White House and crossed Pennsylvania and 17th Street, several cars honked their horns and shouted thank you out the window. So here he is in his diary saying, I talked to Bill de Blasio. I told him to close schools. He did. I talked to Gavin Newsom. I told him to close, Gavin Newsom's chief of staff. I told him to close schools. They did. And then can you play the clip again of him saying what a couple years later?
They always come back and say Fauci was responsible for closing schools. I had nothing to do.
I mean, let's get down to the facts.
Okay. Here's another one that just really stuck in my craw. And I think CNN has a lot of explaining to do. And maybe now that Barry Weiss is involved in CNN a little bit. But I mean, most of the mainstream outlets haven't touched these Fauci diaries at all. And maybe it's because some of their biggest stars are named in them. So you'll recall that Dr. Fauci, the first year of the pandemic, he was talking about, oh, you should cancel Thanksgiving. We can't have a gather, you know, and this is like around the same time that Gavin Newsom was at the French Laundry when people weren't allowed to dine and he was dining with all his fancy people. So Fauci's like, cancel Thanksgiving. But here he is in one of his excerpts in his diary saying, had dinner over at Jake Tapper and Jen Tapper's home in D.C. Terrific couple, friendship building. F you, man.
Oh, that makes me so angry. People were not seeing their grandparents. People were not going
during this exact time. You had to let your loved ones die without you.
Right.
You didn't see your family. You barely did anything. And he is whining and dining with CNN's Jake Tapper, who, of course, on the air is being nothing but supportive of Anthony Fauci and all the lockdowns and all these things. Well, maybe because he's, in Anthony Fauci's words, building a friendship with him.
Mm-hmm.
And there are multiple Dana Bash where they're having private communications with him, being very supportive and criticizing Trump and Trump's team and all of this stuff. And we're supposed to believe that they're fair and balanced. It's everything we went through. And I think the suspicions were always there because those stories would pop out like Gavin Newsom saying, you have to do this, but he's not doing it. And it's like, okay, and that's when it started to wear on people who had a brain. Like, no, I'm not doing this anymore. They're not doing it. Governor's not doing it. I'm not doing it anymore. But I mean, all of this. And so even though I think he has a pardon that's pretty wide ranging, Anthony Fauci, and I don't know, he's like, what, 80 something at this point. He's going to have to testify under oath. And I don't know if there is a committee hearing that I have more looked forward to in my entire life than that one. So that again is going to be July 29th, which is Wednesday, at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time, which is 5:30 a.m. Pacific time. And he is, if he shows up, finally testifying in front of Congress. And there is so much material in these documents about what he knew, what he didn't know, about the origins, what he was saying publicly versus what he believed to be true privately. And so much of what we were put through was a charade. It was an absolute charade. All right, one quick update I want to give you on President Trump's mail-in voting efforts to change mail-in voting. Or, for instance, there was the case that was lost about, oh, you can't, SCOTUS said, no, you can count ballots after Election Day, which would have had a huge impact on the state of Washington. And then also something the Trump administration has been trying to do is say states that do mail-in balloting can't use the USPS unless we have like all this voter data we've been seeking from the state of Washington. So an appeals court is now saying that President Trump cannot impose restrictions on mail-in voting for now. Ahead of the midterm elections. The First Circuit Court of Appeals in Boston on Saturday kept in place an order that blocked the proposed changes to mail-in voting in the 23 states that sued over the executive order. The court said in a 2-1 decision, under the Constitution, state and local officials are responsible for administering federal elections. So I don't think that states like Washington are going to see any sort of changes to mail-in voting ahead of the midterms. And I'll be frank, there's a lot of things I want to see change, the voter ID, common sense, all of that. Any effort to change widespread how a state runs its elections this late in the game, I think would be just an absolute mess. I mean, how would you, for instance, if they had blocked states from counting ballots late, our state, they count them for weeks. Could they even have implemented that change in time for November? I mean, possibly, but I'm not so sure. And then it might introduce a whole new slew of problems. So don't get me wrong. There's a lot of changes that have to take place. But a few months before an election and a few days before a primary, I just don't know if that makes an awful lot of sense. All right, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll, comments from the live stream coming up next. First, are you looking to save some money, you and your family? Times are tight. The gas prices are insane. Our friends at FirstMark Insurance might be able to help you out, and they might not be able to, but you're not going to know until you take the FirstMark challenge. It doesn't cost you anything. It just takes you a little bit of time to give them a call, arrange time to speak with FirstMark about your insurance needs, they'll ask you a few questions about your family, what's going on in your life. Then they'll go out and do all the work. They'll shop their market of carriers. They'll come back with their recommendations. And so many undivided viewers and listeners are saving thousands of dollars a year. Let's say FirstMark can save you, say, $1,000 a year. If you do the math 20 years from now, that's $20,000 that FirstMark would have saved you. Mike and I saved $2,000 this year on our renewals. $2,000. In 20 years, that's $40,000. And you can still get great insurance. And for instance, you might be able to get the same insurance at a better rate. You just won't know until you talk to our friends at FirstMark. 11,000 people have already taken the FirstMark challenge. You could be the next FirstMark victory. Go to FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The FirstMark challenge is free. Your excuses are not. They might be costing you. All right, let's get to our subscriber show poll because I struggle with this. Like, if the mayor hadn't been at the press conference, people would have been like, why isn't the mayor there?
Mm-hmm.
But then if it's like 6 hours later and they're saying we're waiting for dignitaries, then you look like a jerk for taking so long to get there. So I asked you, do you think it's important for elected leaders to speak to the public in the immediate aftermath of mass casualty events? Yes or no? And so this wouldn't include like sheriffs, for instance, who are elected. I mean, like your dignitaries. Nicole.
If they can get there in a timely manner, yes, then I think it's a good thing to have a show of, you know, everything's okay. We're keeping the community safe. This is what's happening. So I think that nobody should be waiting for the dignitaries to get there. I'm not, you know, based on what we know, I'm not convinced that's the case anyway. I mean, I think that they were waiting for them at the end, but that's because nobody told them it was happening and in a reasonable amount of time. But yeah, no, I don't think if they're like Chief Barnes, I mean, anywhere in the country, you could probably get to there in 5 hours. So I'm not sure why he wasn't there by that time. But no, I don't think we should be waiting for them.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would say, yes, in general, they should be there, you know, to just show like we've got this under control. But at the onset, I just want to hear from the cops. Like, hey, tell me how many people are dead? How many people are hurt? Is the risk to the public dealt with? So 71% of you said yes. You do think it's important for them to speak to the public in the aftermath of a mass casualty event. And I would say it's also like if it's some sort of natural disaster, you do need to hear from the governor because all that goes back to, you know, like the National Guard and things that the state actually controls. In this case, I wouldn't have waited a second for the governor. He has nothing at all to do with what happens.
But I would say that there is quite obviously there's a leadership problem here. Nobody, it seems like nobody knew who to talk to get the correct information out.
Yep.
And so even that poor guy, given the, I know. Standing in for the chief, I mean, it was very clear. He wasn't sure what he should say, what he shouldn't say. He was very lost in the moment. And I'm like, there's a leadership problem.
Yes. And the police department's leadership problem is tied to the mayor because the mayor's office controls the police department. Right. So I think a lot of this is the result of having a mayor who's virtually never had a job and lived off her parents' teats.
And a police chief that's not a good leader.
Well, he's not even there.
He's not even there.
And that's this whole stupid thing about, oh, let's promote or let's hire someone from the outside who doesn't have the toxic culture of the inside. It's like, wait a second. So you're going to hire someone who's never lived in the city, knows nothing about the city, as opposed to somebody who's been on the beat for 30 years? Because what reason? They're white? I don't know what it is. It's so stupid. Mm-hmm. Let's see. D says immediately, not necessarily. Within 24 hours, yes. My issue with how it was handled last night, though, is that it should have been the mayor's job solely. She should have been more assertive and able to handle a crisis. The governor and other politicians don't need to gather together first. Yeah. Why does Congressman Jayapal need to be there? She does not. She has nothing to do with the issue. Put a statement out on X. We don't need to hear from you. We don't need to hear from the governor either. Has nothing to do with you because all you're going to talk about is gun control.
I don't mind her being there if you want to be involved as the federal, you know, representative, but you don't need to. Shouldn't be waiting for you. And no. I don't really even think you need to talk, although she didn't do a lot. It was Jonathan asking her a question.
Yeah, she was asked questions. That's different.
So yep. It wasn't a lot. But I don't actually mind them being there.
Yeah.
Because I feel like as many people that know things going on is okay. But you don't need to be waiting for anybody to have a photo.
Yeah. And there's some great examples of this where I think DeSantis does it really well mm-hmm. in Florida. I think Abbott does it well in Texas. They've had some natural disasters tied to like mm-hmm. weather, and they'll get up, but they'll almost be sort of the, for lack of a better phrase, like the master of ceremonies. Well, they'll be like, we're here to get a briefing. So-and-so is going to speak to you. They'll bring them up. And then in between, they'll be like, so-and-so is going to speak to you. Bring them up. So you are showing you're in control. You're introducing the people who are giving mm-hmm. the on-the-ground information. You're still there. And I've said, and I rarely give Jay Inslee credit, I thought some of his press conferences on the Oso landslide were really a masterclass in staying out of the way mm-hmm. when you weren't needed.
Right. And I think that's what Katie was supposed to be doing. That's why she started talking. And then she got lost in her...
Got lost in the sauce.
Yeah. And forgot that she was supposed to introduce this guy next to him.
Yeah. Maggie says, I wish they would speak plainly and honestly about what actually happened and not use it for their soapbox moment, i.e. mm-hmm. gun violence, and for the SPD chief to describe gangs as small groups of people in conflict. Just say what they are. Yeah. These were small groups of people in conflict. Oh, would you call it a gang? It's like they don't want to do that because it's all about race. Winton Dillard said, I thought the assistant chief in the absence of the chief did a great job. I think the mayor's PR people need to work with her on what to say and when to speak and not speak. Yeah, I like the assistant chief. He's actually a really nice guy. I've met him a few times. And you have these people being thrust into this situation that they're not technically the ones. I mean, any assistant chief mm-hmm. should be able to brief the press. And I don't know why he didn't know some of the details. Were you not able to release it? Did they really not know how many guns they'd taken 6 hours later? So that is concerning for me. Gulmerk says, but we don't need to delay for the governor and senators to weigh in. The mayor in chief should have been sufficient.
I also think they don't need to say, we don't know. Say, we're not releasing that. Because I understand I'm protecting the integrity of an investigation. So you could say, protecting or not releasing that, but he kept saying, I don't know. We don't know.
I don't want them to say we're not releasing that yet. If the answer is just we don't know.
He knows what kind of gun was there. He said we have two guns. Yeah. I mean, either somebody didn't tell him, but they know what kind of guns those are.
Yeah. You can look at it and say it's this kind of gun. But yeah, I mean, if you don't know, I have no issue with elected leaders saying we do not know that yet. Yes, we're working to get that information.
We'll bring it to you
as soon as we can.
If you really don't know. But yeah. They knew what kind of guns those were.
Yeah.
And they knew it was gang, I'm sure.
Yeah, they're stupid. All right, let's just do... I saw a comment that cracked me up. Comments from the live stream. Yep. Necro Two Shoes says, hey, Brandy, how do you feel about Inslee's press conference about Chaz Chop? You know how I feel about that. When Inslee... I know Inslee's a dimwit. But on Oso, I didn't think he was half bad. But yeah, when he said, what, Chop? I haven't heard about that. It's like been 48 hours or something.
From Christina, leaders is a stretch for those who represent Seattle. I don't think anyone there is leading.
Yeah.
It's true. It seems like a big mess of voices.
Incompetence. Diana Manning, how the heck can it be a gun-free zone if you don't ensure it's a gun-free zone? Absolutely ridiculous. The only people who are not going to bring in guns are law-abiding citizens. But yeah. Mm-hmm. And they'll like let them bring in backpacks and mm-hmm. all sorts of stuff.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
From RD 1084, what ridiculous people. They are amateurs at best. In gun-controlled Washington, they will want more. It is gang and a criminal problem. Turn the cops loose and let them do gang intervention.
Yep.
Jackie Eaton. Cut back on the gang.
The gang unit maybe. It's racist. Right. Jack Eaton. And you think if there were white supremacist gangs roaming the streets of Seattle shooting each other, that they wouldn't be all over that?
Of course.
As they should. Mm-hmm. Jack Eaton, not a gun problem. 100% criminal problem, lack of leadership. zero true deterrence. These people put the criminals first. Look at what happened in New York on Saturday. Same thing happened. What kind of press conference is it when you have the mayor, governor, and a U.S. congresswoman present? Are they there to back up their incompetent mayor and lack of police chief? Yeah, I don't know.
Well, again, I like to see them drop everything they're doing and go to this because that's what they're voted in to do, is to be there.
Yeah.
But, so I'm okay with them going, but delaying a press conference, no.
No, absolutely not. All right, lost it over the ballot language from Haynes 5446. Nicole.
Oh, I thought the lotto earnings went to the schools.
Look, there's a lot of things. We, like, yeah, everything's going to schools.
I mean, they get a lot of money.
They do. CP on Minnesota giving kids trans dolls. This is so flabbergasting. I agree. It makes no sense.
On Fauci's personal diary, which, who keeps a diary like that?
I know, but he is old. Older people, you know, probably are used to writing are stuff they? Down.
I don't know any old people that keep diaries.
I don't know.
It's so bizarre. Wisecastle says Fauci misled the public so badly that they really have to assume that he had some hidden self-interest motivation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's addicted to the fame, just like 13-year-olds, just like 15-year-olds. Like, people get addicted to the clicks.
Yeah, you've been this lifelong sort of public servant toiling away in obscurity, and you think your work's really important. Then all of a sudden people see it and it's like, wow, people think I'm cute. They've got crushes on me. He even wrote in there about throwing out the first pitch at the Mariners game. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And he complained that the news media put a microphone near a small group of people booing him, but it was really a long standing ovation from most of the crowd. And he called it a perfect pitch. Perfect. I was like, oh my gosh. Observer, only the stupid or arrogant keep records of their nefarious activities. Yeah. Well, he didn't see it as nefarious.
So
he just forgot what he wrote in his diary and then lied about it later.
And, oh, well, maybe he was new to this and didn't realize that these could be confiscated at some point.
Yeah.
Because especially when you're working with government, why are you keeping record of this embarrassing stuff?
I know.
Not the real Batman says, the heck. The heck is this dude having dinner? What the heck is this dude having dinner with media people? And
that's
disgusting.
You know, I've had coffee, dinner with politicians, sources, things like that, you know, but
not 3 months into COVID.
No.
4 months into COVID, when you're telling people that they can only, you know, have food outdoors and whatever, cages, whatever.
Yeah, don't see your family.
Don't see your family. Can't say goodbyes.
Nancy Campbell, $9.99 Super Chat. Fantastic show today, Brandy. Buying you a shot. It's going to take more than a shot to fix what ails me, that's for sure. All right, Nicole, thank you. We'll get to our closing sanity check in a moment. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. They are Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers, and they always got work to do. There's constantly new policies being put forth at the local level. There's one in Spokane right now having to do with landlords providing air conditioners to all their tenants. There's one in Seattle that has to do with so-called junk fees. So RHA is busy dealing with those on your behalf. And so they really are just your best advocate. And by becoming a member, you can attend all the great events they have across the state. They're also down in Olympia advocating on your behalf during the legislative session and even tackling some of these issues in a court of law. So RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. All right. I'm going to invite you guys to something. But XXXY, our friend Jennifer Say, very pro protecting women's sporting brand, put out this great video after Sophie Cunningham, the WNBA star, came out saying, yeah, I support protecting girls' sports. That's common sense. And so XXXY did a video of young female athletes thanking Sophie, and it included some female athletes from our state.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You stood up for us. You didn't have to.
You could have taken the easy way out.
You could have sat back
and enjoyed your fame.
You could have avoided the hate,
taken the money,
and quietly closed the door behind you,
leaving girls like us
to fight this battle alone.
But you didn't.
You spoke up.
You spoke up.
When it comes just to protecting young girls in sport, I feel very strongly about that.
And said what millions of women were thinking,
but were too afraid to say.
And when they tried to make you back down,
you stood even taller.
Yeah, I said what I said. I think it's kind of common sense.
So thank you.
So thank you.
Thank you for showing me what strength looks like.
What courage looks like.
What integrity is.
And I think I'll always believe in that.
Thank you for showing us what it means to be a real woman.
Love that. And there's going to be an opportunity to see Sophie Cunningham play in person. So tomorrow, this is her first game since this ordeal where she spoke common sense and the left went deranged on her. So the Indiana Fever are going to be playing the Seattle Storm at Climate Pledge Arena tomorrow evening. And we are going to be hosting a rally in support of Sophie Cunningham, along with Women Are Real, an organization from California that's going to be coming up for it. And so I would love for you guys to come. And this is about positivity. It's not about negativity. Remember, anything we say or do at the rally reflects on Sophie ultimately, but it's just about thanking her for standing up for girls, for speaking the truth. I know there are going to be some young female athletes. If you're a parent of young female athletes, you want to bring them with you. So we're going to be meeting outside the front of Climate Pledge Arena, 5 o'clock p.m. and rallying a little bit with some signs and some cutouts of Sophie and a mobile billboard and all sorts of things. So I would love to see you there. And I'm sure there's still some tickets left for the game. If you want to also come inside, wear your Save Women's Sports gear, XXXY gear, try to get that on TV, which is the goal, right? And then also, Caitlin Clark plays on the Indiana Fever, and I've been wanting to watch her play as well. So you know what? We're going to take in the game, do a little rally. I'll make sure I post that on our subscription platforms and across social media, but I would love to see you guys there at 5 p.m. tomorrow in front of Climate Pledge Arena. God, I hate the name of that arena. So stupid. The Pledge. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Appreciate every single one of you supporting our show, an alternative to the failing, lying legacy media. A special thank you to our paid subscribers who pay $5 a month, and that's what makes this show possible. If you'd like to join them, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. And then you join our growing community of sane people just like you. We will be back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.